It's a Friday, as always. We are brought to you by Henderson and Watercutty. Henderson and Watercutty, see more at stlcriminaldefense.com. Our visits with Ben Fredrickson of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. And Ben, I'm just wondering if you can swing the bat, because right now the Cardinals' offense is AWOL, man. It's not good. They need to swing the bat if they're going to make postseason play. Good morning to you.
Good morning, man. And as a sports writer, I never ever make jokes about being good at sports. And the few sports that I was relatively okay at, on that list, hitting was not one of them. So I was all about heart and hustle, and I was not a terrible defensive player, but when it came to hitting, that was actually the reason I decided to move on from baseball. So I would offer no help, but yeah, that's the story, right? Is this Cardinals offense, and for a team that does a lot of things well, pitching, defense, it really has continued to struggle to find that any sort of a consistent offense. And now that the pitching is being tested, we saw another challenge now with the loss of Dakota Hudson for the time being, which is so disappointing because he'd played so well, and I felt like he was really starting to show why I've been so high on him, for all the stats folks who think he's going to fall off a cliff with his numbers. I thought he was really having a good run, and of course now he's out. But the offense needs to carry the team right now, Dan. That they're playing bad teams, with the Pirates, another series up ahead against the Royals to finish out the regular season on the road before coming home, and they can't score runs. You lose games to bad teams when your offense cannot have any semblance of consistency. This team relies too much on its strengths, and it really needs to cobble together some sort of a run. We haven't seen the Cardinals string together any wins. They need to do that to get away from that gravitational pull of 500. But it's hard to do it when you have nights where you can't find any runs, and you have to scratch and claw for every single win.
I gotta wonder if it's the approach. I gotta wonder if it's the talent. If it's a combination of the both offensively. I'm at a loss at this point. But two hits in the game last night. Two hits in the game two doubleheader the night before. So it hasn't been pretty, and it's got to change, else you're going to be looking on the outside of the bubble.
Yeah, I think it's a few things. It's completely fair to say what's going on with Jeff Albert as the hitting coach. Mozeliak doesn't want to go there, and I get it. You know, he doesn't want to dig into analyzing coaches and players right now, because his motto is like, we just got to get through the season. It's COVID. And we're not going to start doing off season evaluations during this crazy season. So while I respect that, it doesn't stop people from analyzing what we're seeing. This was a huge year for Jeff Albert as the hitting coach, with all of the off season storylines about his connection to Houston and what he did or didn't know, down there in the electronic sign stealing scandal. More importantly, what the offense didn't do last season. You know, it let Marcell Ozuna walk on a very team-friendly deal for the Braves and didn't try to match it beyond the QO, and with the pledge that it was going to create offense from within. And those guys aren't producing, and Matt Carpenter isn't hitting. And, you know, some of the pluses have been short compared to the list of things that are frustrating about this offense. So approach, yeah, that's fair game to look at. Talent is fair game to look at. The Cardinals turned to this unproven outfield and said, we think we're going to be able to not only match the production loss from Ozuna, but exceed our production as a team offensively with this group. Hasn't been able to do it. Cardinals are walking more, but the power is way down. And that's, they're relying so much on the infield to produce the offense. It's one of the worst performing outfields in baseball, offensively. It's one of the worst performing outfields offensively in Cardinals history, going back decades. And that's just so hard to do. I mean, when you look at where outfielders hit for other teams, they're not 7, 8, 9. They're not changing those in the lineup every night. And you have to take into consideration the impact. You know, the team was affected by 2 weeks off. That hurts timing. You have to take into consideration the injuries and the people who aren't there. Dexter Fowler had been hitting well, and now he's no longer available, at least for the foreseeable future. So there are things like losing Paul DeJong for a period of time that you have to factor in. But across the board, you look at the offense and go, this is the same offense, but worse. And it's a question of either talent or approach, probably a combination of both in most cases, it's not good enough. And it hasn't been good enough. They do a lot of things well. The Cardinals don't need to have a world-beating offense. They pitch well, they defend well, that's their strength. But they have to have an average offense, and they don't. They don't have that right now.
Yeah, they get on base for the most part. I mean, these last two games have been outliers, but they get on base. But the slugging, the power, and the fact that they don't drive in runs is perplexing. That does not happen, and they don't get guys in. That's a real problem. So it needs to be addressed, whether it comes from an outside source this offseason. But I do think from the outfield perspective, you got to bring in a given coming in next year. Now, you will have Dexter Fowler healthy enough, and you might get him back for this stretch run. I'm still high on Dylan Carlson. I don't know about the other guys. If Bader can hit 230, 240, I'm fine with that because he can hide that to an extent. And I have seen signs of him getting better, but I think you have to have some kind of given in that outfield coming back to make sure that you're covered.
Yeah, I mean, I like Tyler O'Neill, and I don't like to, you know, I wish it would have worked out differently for him, but all I see from that is he's getting the three consecutive years now where he hasn't gotten a ton of opportunity, but he's gotten a decent amount, and his OPS has declined every season that he's been in the bigs. You know, the home runs are going to be there occasionally, but he doesn't do enough other things regularly enough to justify the power. The power is not big enough. If he was hitting more home runs, then you could maybe make it work out, but it's not enough power regularly enough. I'm with you on Carlson. I tried to temper expectations some for him beforehand because I felt like people thought he was going to be the catalyst for the offense, and that's so unfair to expect him to do that. He's not Albert Pujols. He might be a great player, and the Cardinals, I think, still think he can be. And I wish he was playing now, because if we're going to watch all these outfielders struggle, I'd rather watch the guy that I think we all agree might have the highest ceiling, and that's Carlson. But I think, you know, Lane Thomas has been disappointing to me. He hasn't had as much time as the others. He missed time due to COVID, so you factor that in. But he has not played well defensively. I think he's a better defensive player than he showed. But all we can do is acknowledge what we've seen. And the offense hasn't been there for him either. You know, I'm to the point now where I'd rather just see them hand it to Carlson and let him get the reps. But expecting him to be that guy is, we've seen enough now to know that I think that's asking a lot of him if you just roll into next season with that being the expectation. I'm with you. The outfield has to be a place of improvement. I think Carpenter's another thorny situation. You know, he said very bluntly that this season was about him putting up the numbers that prove that he belongs out there. And he's been a step back from where he was last season, and that was the worst season of his career. The contract is tough. It's not like an easily movable situation. But I think just hoping that all of a sudden there's going to be an uptick there, I don't know what evidence that's being based off of. The bad luck that he shook himself out of in previous seasons, those numbers aren't there. And you really look back at not just last season, but the kind of the tail end of his hot streak the year before that. And they haven't been very competitive at bats in terms of the hitter that he used to be. So the Cardinals have some big questions. They have not answered their questions offensively. And here's the biggest one. They gave Paul Goldschmidt, Dan, the biggest contract in club history on that extension. And he's on an island in the lineup. I don't know why any team gives him a single pitch to hit.
Yep, I agree.
You know, you throw him a strike, that's fine, but not anything you can put good wood on, because make the other teammates beat you, and that's a good bet when you're playing this lineup right now. So he's not being maximized. It's amazing what his numbers are, considering that that so many teams are pitching around him, obviously. They have to have some more, you know, threats in the lineup in order to get the best out of the guy they're giving the most money to in Paul Goldschmidt.
STL Criminal Defense, and that is Henderson and Watercutty. They bring us our good friend Ben Fredrickson, and that is every Friday here on ScoopsWithDannyMac.com. STL Criminal Defense, no matter how big or small the offense, help you in both the state of Missouri and Illinois. Henderson and Watercutty. Adam Wainwright is the ace, unquestionably, of the St. Louis Cardinals this year. It's not Jack Flaherty. It's not Dakota Hudson. Not Johan Oviedo. Not Carlos Martinez. It is undoubtedly Adam Wainwright. And the thing that you can really watch with Adam Wainwright is not only the numbers he's putting up and the wins and the ERA, but showing you, if I'm a young pitcher, I'm wondering how is he doing it at the age of 39 and getting the innings? But the other thing about being an ace is that when your team is down and you need a win or you need a pick-me-up, you're the guy that they go to. He's done that. And also, when you have doubleheaders like they've had this year and you need innings, he provides it even without his best stuff. That's what an ace does. He's been unbelievable this year. He deserves all the accolades and the kudos that come his way.
Hard to disagree with any of what you said. He has been the guy who stops the bleeding. He's been the reason, I think, that they haven't fallen off on one of these lengthy losing streaks. They can't go on a winning streak because they don't have enough offense. But the reason they haven't gone on a losing streak is because of Adam Wainwright. When he goes out and gets them a win and saves the bullpen and resets everybody and stokes the competitive fire of everyone who watches him pitch. And he does that every time he goes out there. He's been the reliable pitcher and the reliable leader in a season where reliability is the most important strength a team can have. And the Cardinals haven't had much of it, but he has been the rock. And it's been remarkable, man. I'm happy for him personally. But also, you know, he's showing that it's not just about velocity. It's about pitching. It's about determination, grit, all those things that seem to get thrown out the window these days. He's proving that these things still matter. So, I hope he wants to pitch in the future. I imagine the Cardinals would love to have him back. And it's going to be very interesting to see if Adam Wainwright feels like he and Yadier Molina are a twin billing here or a package deal. And that's going to be a very interesting conversation as we look at the future of those guys. I think it probably ends with both of them still in St. Louis, but there are a lot of people who were ready to write Adam Wainwright off, and he's getting the laugh here. We'll see if it's the last laugh, but you know, he's always been a guy who's been easy to say, well, this, you know, the Cardinals are sticking to him. The Cardinals are not turning the page. They're through relying on Adam Wainwright. And there've been times, Dan, where that's true. But it's not true now, and you're seeing why Adam Wainwright has that respect of his manager, of his teammates, because, you know, he's not the guy you want to write off. And there were some people who rushed to do it, and now they look silly for having done it. I think he's healthy. I think he's confident. I think he's enjoying pitching, and he's showing that he's still got more than a few tricks and a whole lot of toughness up his sleeve.
Yeah, and this time next week, we may be seeing the final weekend, maybe at home, in a Cardinal uniform for Adam Wainwright and Yadier Molina. Maybe. We'll talk more about that next weekend. You wrote a really interesting piece about what's happening with high school sports in the county. Dive into that piece and some of your reporting and just your thoughts on what you came up with.
Well, initially, Well, first of all, let me say this. This is a tough spot for county officials to be in. It's a tough spot for high school players, parents, coaches to be in. I feel for everybody. And this isn't a situation that I don't think needs more gasoline poured on the fire. Feelings are raw. It's been a trying period for everybody, and especially these kids who just want to play and they can't understand why they're not getting a chance to play. And, you know, I really felt like last week that Sam Page and the county needed to clarify some things. They had made the decision to, you know, keep most of the limits on competitions for most high school sports, you know, other than completely, you know, no contact sports that are now going to be allowed to compete in games and contests like cross country or golf, things you can really do distanced without any sort of real interaction. But football, soccer, those things are while they're allowed to practice, they're not allowed to play games in the county. And that's why everybody plays, right? You want to play to win the game. You play to have the games. So for kids who are trying to get college scholarships and trying to win a state championship, all those things, they're not going to get that chance where things stand now. And it's been the county's recommendation for fall sports to shift to this alternate fall season. Which presents its own challenges. Scheduling can be drastic. What do you really want high school football players playing? What would result in two seasons in a calendar year? So the biggest frustration I heard from parents wasn't from parents who are keeping their heads on straight. Now there are some who are just irate, but there are some who are legitimately confused. and have a healthy respect for the virus. They want things to be safe. That's priority number one. But they were confused as to where's the data that's supporting these decisions, especially when there was an independent task force made up of medical experts that said that they knew of no sports-related transmission in youth sports. So I felt that was a fair complaint, and I thought Sam Page should clarify that a little bit. And I'll give the county credit. I had a meeting with them this week. I wrote it for Friday's paper. It's in today's Post-Dispatch, a column that I had a sit down with an official from the county, and we walked through some of these questions. Where is the data? What does it say? What do you make of this comment from that task force, and what's your reaction to it? And it was a very helpful conversation. People don't have to love the decisions, but I hopefully think that maybe now they'll understand them a little bit better. What the county says, Dan, is that in the past 3 weeks, they have been able to determine that there have been at least 5 clusters of spread of COVID, not 5 cases, 5 clusters, 5 examples of spread, which includes more than 2 student athletes, youth athletes in each cluster that have been spread specifically from sports. And they can trace that as the only time that those people were around each other was when they were playing or traveling to or participating in these high school sports. This is not saying, hey, there's a bunch of positive cases. They're happening on the same team. They must have gotten it from sports when these same kids are going to parties and all these other things. There are those examples, but those are not the 5 that they're mentioning. So the comment from the independent task force that said that there have not been any spread specifically to sports, that is not accurate per the county health department. So that's news. And there's also this confusion about why is it specific to this age group, this 15 to 19 age group. And what they're finding in St. Louis County, based off of their results, is that the spread and the positivity rate for that age group is higher than they think it should be. It's much higher than kids younger than that. That's concerning for a few reasons. One is those kids can spread it to more vulnerable populations. And the other one is this threat of, well, most young kids are healthy and they're going to, if they do unfortunately get COVID, they should bounce back. There's this growing concern about this threat of myocarditis and how it could affect heart problems and even young healthy kids for potentially long-term effects. So, you know, the county understands that there are people who are upset, and that, you know, part of public policy is that there's going to be public debate. But I do think they tried to explain some of this in a little more detail. We're seeing kind of this division between schools. Some are opted into the fall, to this alternate season. Others just think we're going to wait it out and see if there might be a change. There's plenty of political motivation and discussion about should Sam Page's power as a county executive be altered. We'll see how that plays out. There's going to be push to try to reverse this decision. I don't think it's going to go that way unless something surprising happens, but I do feel like the county owed people a better explanation of some of its data, and I think hopefully it has answered some questions, even if it hasn't changed some opinions, which we all have to have the best data possible before we can have an opinion. So I think they owed people a little more clarity, and hopefully they provided some.
How about the alternate season? How would that work?
It would be tough for a few reasons. A lot of reasons. You would basically have the schools that made the change in St. Louis County. They'd have to compete against one another because a lot of schools across the state are playing, but St. Louis County is going to have different rules because, you know, it's bigger than a lot of the other counties that are making these decisions across the state. It has more cases of COVID than some of these other counties across the state compared to cities and counties of its size. What St. Louis County is doing is pretty comparable to what we're seeing in other areas of that size. 37 states have made some modifications to allow an alternate fall season in the spring or canceled fall sports altogether. So there would have to be, I think scheduling would be a challenge. You'd have to schedule schools that were also playing in that alternate spring season. You'd have to figure out how to have coaches and officials, because there'd be all these sports going on at once. A lot of coaches coach multiple sports. And then you'd also have to figure out how to work with kids going off to college. And, you know, if certain kids are on scholarship, how that would work with them going to their new teams, if that would if that would overlap with things. And then there's other health concerns. I mean, there's health concerns about kids playing two full high school football seasons in a calendar year. I don't think anyone is saying this alternate season is the perfect option. What it would hopefully be is that it would provide some sort of opportunity, while flawed, to give kids a chance to play without completely scrapping their season. Because some of these kids have already, of course, missed key moments in their sports career based off of when this was paused initially from the pandemic and the opportunities that were lost then. So there's no one who's thrilled about these changes in the county. They do feel for these kids. They're trying to make the best decision to keep the population healthy. And it's just really, I think what we're all doing to some degree is making what we hope are the best decisions on a list of bad options.
I'll wrap it up with this. Mizzou, about a week away from Alabama, they're going to be missing some players in that game too, aren't they?
Yeah, as of now, 11 Mizzou players will be unable to play in this season opening game against Alabama due to COVID-related reasons. Those are not all positive COVID cases. We know there were at least 7 at last check of Mizzou football players who have tested positive, but the other players are out for quarantine rules and protocols given down by the SEC. And any player who, of course, tests positive but also is believed to have come into contact with someone who could be positive will now be out for the Alabama game moving forward. And that's going to be the thing here, Dan, is that anybody who not only tests positive but has believed interaction with someone who could be positive, they're going to have to miss at least 14 to 18 days. That means a game. So you're going to have this happening across the SEC and college football. There will be games played that are missing key players, perhaps multiple key players at key positions. And that's just going to be the way college football has to move forward. We've seen the Big Ten say on the front end of its return, these are kind of the percentages we're going to have before a team has to not play. I'll be curious to see if the SEC put some things out beforehand about, you know, levels of quarantine / positive case they could have before a game has to be skipped. I think looking way down the line, the conversation we'll be having in a couple months is that college football perhaps should have put more time in between these games, because now a quarantine session, a period of testing that you have to go through to prove you're able to return, it's going to require at least one game missed. And I think looking back, hindsight being 2020, they might have said, man, we should have started earlier, put 2 weeks between each game, and we could have played more games with more players.
But how does the Big Ten then expect to play if they have an outbreak and they have no weeks off? They're going to play eight straight weeks. I don't know how they get through a season.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah.
This is a bad time to have fingers being crossed.
Go ahead.
Well, here's the thing. I can understand, and clearly the Big Ten was listening to the folks who pushed back, said you have to at least try. You can't say you're not playing. You should at least figure it out, give it a go. But what giving it a go means is that it has the potential to get really messy and be a fraudulent season. And this, I'll be honest, I'm glad college football is trying to play. I'm glad the guys are going to get a shot to play. I hope more than anything that everybody's healthy and that there's not some catastrophe. But if we're going to sit here right now and say that there isn't a chance, this could be the biggest choke of a college football season in the history of college football seasons, going back probably to when you had the Spanish flu, and there were teams that tried to play through that, and there was a varying degree of success and terrible canceled seasons and 3-game seasons. I mean, you have to go all the way back to that. And this could be like that in terms of it being a non-representative college football season. I hope that we get to the point where we're trying to figure out who's in the college football playoff, but good luck comparing those resumes, because you're going to have conference only schedules. And some of them are probably going to play, drastically different amounts of games than other teams. So one case I've heard, and I think it's smart, would be, hey, why not make this is the year that you expand the postseason, because it's going to be a joke trying to figure out who's eligible.
Yeah.
So I think it's probably about a week or two before that conversation revs up.
Here's the other thing. Betting is prevalent in our society.
And it is?
And yeah, I don't know if you knew that. And if you don't know who the players are because of HIPAA laws, think about setting a betting line.
Hey, good luck.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the, I was talking with with a buddy earlier, and we said this will be the worst year to get into betting on college football, or the best, because if you're going to look for upsets, I mean, you really won't know until the day of the game who is available. I mean, it's a drastically different thing if you find out Friday night that the starting quarterback isn't playing.
That's the point.
I mean, and it could happen multiple times. So here's what I would, and not that I'm here to give betting advice, but here's what I think the teams that are going to be strong. I think teams that have instilled coaches are going to be better off. You know, I think this is a tough, this is such a tough spot for Eli Drinkwitz at Mizzou because he's new. He hasn't had a real chance to install his system like he would have liked from the beginning because practices were limited. His knowledge of the roster is limited. Coaches who have been around, I think, will be at an advantage. Quarterbacks who have been around with their offensive coordinator, I think, will be at an advantage. Teams that have depth that has been around and has knowledge of the system. This is going to be a season that I think tests depth, which is why, of course, Alabama will be the team to be shocking, I know. In a normal season, it would be too. But Alabama has guys on its three deep, you know, that are four and five stars. And that's why, you know, a team like that if you're a one, if your team is built around a player, then, and you don't have any good backups, then you're going to be tested this year because that guy could miss a game or two.
Pretty interesting stuff. As always, brought to you by Henderson and Watercutty, STLCriminalDefense.com. Ben? Great stuff. We'll catch you up next Friday. Thanks, my man.
Sounds good, man. Talk to you soon.